from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Am I black in love for you? I don't talk the way you do.
Jazz vocalist Somi joins us to talk about her latest album, which is inspired by the struggles of West African immigrants in the face of gentrification in New York City's Harlem. Then at 10:30, a new documentary short, which has been shortlisted for an Academy Award, shows the plight of refugees and migrants fleeing the coast of Libya for what they hope is a better future in Europe. We'll meet the filmmaker who wanted to show the human cost of the humanitarian crisis. It's coming up next after the news.
Lines erased with blood and water. Who's to say I'm not your lost daughter? Turn the other cheek till I'm black and love for you.
In Harlem, everybody, it was all love, you know, whether if you were African or...
Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.
Look what they've done to Harlem.
The daughter of immigrants from Rwanda and Uganda, jazz vocalist and songwriter Somi's music weaves together elements of American jazz, African rhythms, pop, and soul. Her most recent album, Petite Afrique, was inspired by West African immigrants in Harlem and deals with issues of gentrification. You're listening to Gentry, and Somi joins us in the studio now to talk about the album, her musical career, and her activism. She has performed in venues like the United Nations and Carnegie Hall, and will be live at the New Parish in Oakland on January the 13th. And welcome, Somi.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for being here. So good to have you with us. And let's start with this album. It's inspired by Harlem, which James Weldon Johnson, one of the earliest authors of works like God's Trombones, one of the major figures in the Harlem Renaissance, called Black Manhattan.
Mm-hmm.
For you, it's kind of Petite Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, your activism is taking you to the whole subject of displacement of immigrants in Africa and the kind of conflict between African Americans and these immigrants, too.
Yes, it has. So I've been living in Harlem for just over 10 years. And when I moved there mostly because I wanted to kind of get away from or step aside around the idea of the anonymity that New York City can sort of present. And I was, being a daughter of immigrants, I was comforted in many ways by that longstanding African immigrant community. So this work really began as just a song cycle to acknowledge the dignity of all immigrants and sort of to pay homage to my own parents and the sacrifices they made for myself.
Your music, I mean, your lyrics tell stories, and so many of them are about humanity and just what you touched on and the importance of recognizing humanity. But your voice is really rich. And I was, in reading about your background, I was struck by the fact that you said you sort of learned what your voice was to some extent by playing the cello back in Illinois when you were younger.
Well, yes, I did study the cello throughout childhood. And I always kind of refer to it as one of my earliest voice teachers. You know, people often refer to the timbre of the cello as being closest to the human voice. And so there was an opening, you know, sort of imagining myself now, thinking back to myself as a girl child, sort of resting a cello and allowing myself to kind of connect to the resonance and tonality of the cello. I think it opened something in me. Yeah, so I don't know that I would ever refer to myself as a cellist now, but definitely those early kind of explorations of music making were very much rooted in that time, studying that instrument.
You would refer to yourself, though, as a jazz vocalist, although, as I said in the introduction, there's so much versatility in your work. There's so many influences.
Thank you.
Sometimes it's extraordinary to realize how much, there's Afro-Caribbean and there's also, you know, elements of just African-American music and African music, as well as jazz and R&B and soul, and even hip-hop, too.
I mean, in some ways, I mean, hip-hop, I would say, you know, my last record before Petite Afrique, I did have, you know, Common as a guest on one of the songs. I think for me, jazz is oftentimes the category that I'm placed in because of the freedom that it sort of explicitly demands of all of the members on the bandstand, you know, and the notion of improvisation really, in many ways, is a metaphor for my own kind of social and cultural upbringing and conditioning, being a child of immigrants, living in Zambia, New York, and now, you know, standing in a place of global citizenship as a musician.
You lived in Nigeria for 18 months, too. In fact, you've been sort of all over the African continent. Spent a lot of time in Zambia and South Africa and many other countries. Yeah,
yes.
Tanzania.
Yes, I find a great deal of my inspiration on the African continent. I feel that it's important for us to kind of disrupt the ways in which the Western world perceives the African experience, both back home and throughout the diaspora. And so my work is very much about reconstructing, you know, global identities of the Black experience and giving honor and dignity to the nuance of ourselves. And so that's why, again, to point to the immigrant experience in Harlem.
You just pointed to your band, too, and you have some exceptional musicians working with you, if I may say so. I mean,
thank you.
Thank you for
acknowledging them.
Well, I want to acknowledge them because, I mean, the whole sound really is extraordinary in many ways. And I was found myself quite compelled by your voice, by the music you've created, by the stories you have to tell. I thought maybe we'd hear, in fact, a couple of cuts, and maybe you can tell us something about this. I'd like to play some of the song Black Enough first, which is about tensions that I alluded to before between African and African-American communities. Can you talk about this?
Well, I don't like to really privilege the idea of tension, but I think it is important to acknowledge that there are kind of differences that emerge and keep us sort of separate, even though we come from a very similar experience. And really, we are the same people. You know, we've been displaced from our homeland at different points in history. So really, I like to call attention to the fact that we are the same people. When I wrote the song Black Enough, I was in the middle of reading Yag Yassi's book, Homegoing, which is very much about recognizing that we all have this shared history. That's what her work was about. And so Black Enough is about acknowledging that difference, but also acknowledging the sameness and how, especially in a number of the current issues, such as police brutality, you know, nobody's checking your green card, as I say in one of the lyrics, to see, you know, if you're Black Enough.
Let's hear Black Enough.
I don't talk the way you do. You call me names and try to hurt me. Spit on the ground, open to curse me. They say blood is thicker than water, but you look like my great-grandfather. Walk by, suck teeth. I'm not black enough for you. Am I black enough for you? You call my God a stranger too. Turning your eyes like you don't see me. You only speak if it's a Sunday.
Somi, Black Enough from the new album, and this follows the album that came out of your 18 months in Nigeria, and a lot of the sounds that you got out of that album also came directly from what you absorb, what you process, yeah?
Yes, and I think that time in Lagos, the album that came out of that was the Lagos Music Salon. It was really the first time that I was really just interested in going back and seeing how the continent would allow me to kind of move beyond a romantic notion of home and how the continent itself might influence my, you know, lyrical interests and just storytelling and really be able to talk from a place of, you know, insider understanding. I mean, people criticize the fact that I went to West Africa instead of my home in East Africa. But I wanted it to be an experience that was brand new, that nobody, no loving aunties would try to convince me to steer me in a different direction other than what my heart, you know, was interested in looking at.
I was interested in reading that your mentor, you named as a kind of chief mentor, Hugh Masekela, who was somebody I had the privilege of knowing and interviewing way back when, South African.
Yes.
So, I mean, you really do have so much of the continent, as I said, not only in your music, but just in terms of your experiences. And I should mention for listeners, you're an anthropologist. I mean, you're a trained anthropologist. We were talking a little bit about Zora Neale Hurston before we went on the air, who did field work as an anthropologist many years ago. And the word alien comes in here, too. And I want to hear a cut called Alien, because as a young girl growing up, you heard that word and it was very strange to your ears. What does it mean? I mean, your parents were from Africa, from Rwanda and from Uganda, and they were technically in many ways branded as aliens.
Right. I always found it strange that my family had to carry. I was born in the United States, but my parents and my older siblings at the time, before they were naturalized, had to carry around these cards that said they were, you know, resident aliens. And I just thought that was such a strange thing. So when I heard Sting's English Man in New York, I was like, oh, he must think it's strange, too. And so I recorded this song, Alien, really as a way to to kind of juxtapose what the Western experience is, because his is so much more lighthearted in a way. To
you
what
deconstructed his song, is what you said.
Right, yeah. To deconstruct it into something that really speaks to the darker, if you will, experience that most immigrants of color experience in this country.
Let's hear Alien. Alien from Somi's new album, Petite Afrique, and it's somebody described your voice as luxurious. I think that's a good way to describe it.
That's very kind.
Let me give out the phone number. If you'd like to join us, if you'll have some reaction to the music you're hearing by Somi, or if you have questions for her, if you'd simply like to join our conversation, we invite you to be part of the program. Our toll-free number is available right now. It's 866-733-6786. Join us at 866-733-6786. You can also join us by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or go to our website and post any questions or comments or responses you might have there, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, or go to our Facebook page. Talk a little bit about your influences as jazz vocalists.
In terms of the jazz vocalists whom I love?
That you have been influenced by, that have been catalysts to your work, that have had impact on you?
Sure. I would say the first person who comes to mind is Nina Simone, just because of her sort of ferocious truth-telling and commitment to telling the truth even when it's uncomfortable for people to hear. And there's this kind of raw beauty about her voice. I remember the first time I heard her, I didn't really appreciate her. But I would say, in time, it's that sense of nuance, and there's so much story inside of just even how she's articulating those stories.
Do you ever hear her songs about Martin Luther King? I mean, she did a whole album after King's assassination. They're just unbelievably good, powerful. Mm-hmm. And they tell the story of
right.
him. Yeah.
You know, so I think in addition to her, I would also say I would also say I love Diane Reeves a great deal, just because of her technical mastery.
What about Sarah more Vaughan. Like Billie Holiday and
Sarah Vaughan? Is
Sarah Vaughan,
one.
Yeah.
Yes. Those would probably be, I would say, the top three for me in terms of, and I would also say Abby Lincoln, because Abby Lincoln was a storyteller, and just she was just a wielder of magic. So really, I mean, if we're talking about the older school, it would be Sarah and Abby Lincoln and Nina Simone. But I can't also, can I also mention Mary McKeeba? Because even though people don't refer to her as a jazz vocalist, I would say, you know, she was a part of that tradition in her own way.
She was my introduction to African music, really. I mean, back when she was married to Stokely Carmichael,
right.
This goes way back. And her voice does have strong elements of jazz. It prompts me to ask you, in fact, about when you think about jazz and when you think about, well, African-American music going all the way back to spirituals, there's a link. There's a whole lineage, really.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't?
Mm-hmm.
Soul
Absolutely.
Music and jazz music really go back to not only African roots, but also American roots here and spirituals.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, I think when we talk about spirit, we're really just talking about telling the truth, you know, connecting with the truth and offering it to the people. So, I completely agree in terms of...
How does that work in your activism, for example? I mean, because you are a political activist. In fact, you were here in San Francisco back in 2017 working on behalf of African immigrant communities.
You know, I never really consider myself an activist. I think it's a title that people have given me because I am interested in social impact. I am interested in kind of disrupting the ways in which artists and audience engage with each other and how we might be able to speak about the communities around ourselves and make space. I'm always very interested in space making and hopefully giving agency to other voices to emerge, not just in the arts, but in their own way and whatever their personal journey might be and the dignity of their lives.
But you speak about human rights and the importance of recognizing individuals
Absolutely.
And their humanity, and this is a form of activism.
Absolutely. I mean, I can understand the argument. I think when I consider an activist, I think of them on the front lines. And so perhaps in the way being on stage with a microphone, you are in many ways on the front line. But I, you know, to call myself an activist alongside some of the great, you know, the people who are in the trenches day in, day out is a huge compliment to myself.
Well, I've been complimenting you since you almost sat down here, especially on your music. But I think that mantle fits. I think you,
thank you
from what I know about you. Could you say something about what people can expect for the live show you're doing?
What people can expect from the live show, I'll be joined by three wonderful instrumentalists, Jamal Nichols on bass, Otis Brown III on drums, and Toro Dodo on piano. And we'll be sharing music from this record, but also from my last record. And, you know, hopefully it'll just be about telling the truth and opening hearts.
Let's open up some phones here. And again, the number to join us, 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org. Washington, good morning. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you very much. Sami, I just bought my ticket to your concert on the 15th, so I'm very
Thank you.
Excited about seeing you. My question is, you know, I'm originally from Kenya, so my question is, how do we reconcile our pride in our heritage with some of the realities of life back in Kenya, in Uganda, in Rwanda, that bring about some of the challenges that immigrants face when they have to flee oppression, when they have to flee corruption, and end up in places like Spain and Italy and even in New York? How do you reconcile that pride and the reality of really a continent that is still struggling 60-70 years after the independence?
Thank you for the question, Washington. Tell me.
Yes, you know, I think how do we reconcile the dignity of ourselves? You know, I think there's no one answer for that question. I think that we really just have to do our best and show up. I think the most important is that we show up and we remember ourselves, we tell our stories so that people understand the dignity of our journeys and they understand, you know, the importance of and value of our voices. And I think that that inspires people to go back home and continue to do the work so that we can continue to see development across sectors. And I think it's important for us to continue to return. I think we're living in a time when Africa is very much in vogue. So it's to our benefit, but I think that we can't squander this moment where people are paying attention to what we have to say and that the efforts that are being made back home and abroad. So I think really I would charge anyone to just to show up and to do the work and just to always remember ourselves and to be proud of who we are.
And thank you, Washington, for that call. One of the unfortunate things that occurs to me is you come from a background, parents from Rwanda and Uganda, basically all still associated with violence in many people's minds. I mean, Uganda has gone through some major changes, but people think of Idi Amin. I mean, Americans particularly, because there was so much showcasing of that story of Idi Amin. And when they think of Rwanda, they think of the Hutus and the Tutsis, even though there's been major advancements beyond that civil war and beyond the bloodshed.
You know, I think my first thing is just to ask people to educate themselves, to engage with the world, to read. You know, I mean, it sounds kind of maybe trite and kind of to the point.
No, it sounds very necessary.
It is quite necessary. I think that if we all just take the time to educate ourselves about the world in which we live, then we'd realize that, I mean, both of those countries, where I'm proud of both of them. I'm proud of the development of both of them. I mean, you'll see leaps and bounds, just significant strides. And I think it's important to visit as well. So if you have the opportunity to visit, then wonderful. We welcome you.
These are beautiful countries, by
beautiful
the way.
Countries. Yeah. And if you don't have the opportunity to visit anytime soon, then I just encourage you to read and stay informed and actually really see what's going on in those countries.
And listen to public radio. That helps, too.
And listen to public radio. It helps.
You know, let me get back to gentrification. We'll get some more callers on here. But it's something we think about a lot here in the Bay Area, mainly because, well, let me ask you, you're having moved to Harlem 10 years ago. You consider yourself a gentrifier? You think it's possible for more privileged newcomers to move to a place without gentrifying it? And if so, how?
Well, you know, I think that it would be naive to assume that people who are, you know, perhaps, quote unquote, more educated or more privileged, let me say that, move into the communities and aren't in some way a part of that gentrification. But at the same time, that's to assume that educated and privileged people of color have not always been in those communities. And they have been. They've always made it their home and our home. And so, you know, I grew up in the Midwest mostly, and so I had a very different experience. But coming to Harlem, you know, there are other parts of Manhattan that it's harder to, for example, before Harlem became interesting to live in, interesting is in quotes, for the masses, it was hard for professionals of color to get into other parts of the city where they might want to live because they can afford it or because they want to or whatever the case.
But then Bill Clinton moved there, so.
well, you know, I mean, I think my point is just that I think that people like myself, you know, somebody who's coming with, and I don't take my own privilege for granted, whether that's through education or socioeconomic or what have you. I think it's important to acknowledge that there have always been people who've been there, who are educated professionals, who have been just as committed to the community as anyone else, because they wanted to live amongst their own families and they wanted to live in a place where they felt welcomed, frankly. So to say that we are a part of that gentrification, I think from a generational point of view, I'm a newcomer, right? So, I mean, I've only been there for 10 years and I remember when the coffee shops opened. I remember, you know, and that's why there's a line in my song, The Gentry, where it's like, would you like some coffee or some tea? Because that's always the first sign when you see the kind of hipster cafe pop up. And you know, I think that, yes, I was there for the birth of that. But
a lot of your feeling is with the working class, though. I mean, from your music.
My feeling is with the oppressed. You know, and that community is predominantly working class, but I'm with anybody who needs to be heard.
Here's Ryle. Let's hear from him. Ryle, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, hello. Ryle is a she, but that's okay. Michael, I do always tune into your show when I can.
Thank
it's
you.
Wonderful. always relevant. And I just want to say to the artist featured right now, I'm sorry I'm blanking on your name because I have stage fright at the moment, but I am viewed by my children as such a dinosaur because I never do iTunes. I don't know. I fumble with my phone, but having heard your magical, sublime voice this morning, I'm going to change my habit now, and your songs are going to be the first ones I download. They are simply beautiful and sublime. And so much, Michael, for introducing this wonderful artist to the greater public.
Well, thank you for your response, because
thank you.
Her work is magical and inspiring, and we're going to go out with it here. Somi,
thank you so much.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having
me. The concert, let's plug it again, is going to be in Oakland, Paramount, the New Parish on
the
January
new parish.
13th. Sorry, I flubbed that for a moment, but I managed to restore it at the New Parish on January 13th. Hear and see Somi. You're listening to Forum on KQED.